outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, this is dangerous.
How so?
Recording 3 weeks in advance for when this will actually air.
It is. It's definitely limiting.
The whole world could change in 3 weeks, but you've got a baby on final approach.
I do.
It'll be here Monday or Tuesday, or it'll be here before or Tuesday, right?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So they're inducing on Tuesday.
Yeah. So that's going on. Then Sarah and I are leaving town. We're taking a little bit of a break and going away to see our son and spend a little time in Colorado. And then I'm only back 2 days, and then I'm off to somewhere. Even kind of crazy to announce, because that trip will be over when this airs. Sorry, you missed me if you're in the Charlotte awesome. Area and want to hang out with me. But we're putting that out through other means. And boy, did you see the whole Christianity Today brouhaha?
I did not. I'm not aware of what's going on at Christianity Today.
Oh, they've got some articles out about sexual harassment in their office, which for Christianity Today is, on one sense, a bit of a shock, because they're pretty... they're pretty buttoned down on things like this, you would think. But, you know, as I'm reading it, I'm reading from two sides. There's a friend, but someone I've read extensively about who's been accused of it. And he's got a thing saying, nope, I'm innocent, but there's women. I mean, it's kind of one of those he said, she said. But definitely what underlies it is how inappropriate the contact of the sexes has been over the course of my lifetime. I look at some of the things that are problematic going, gosh, 50 years ago when I started, 50 years ago, 46, when I started in ministry or started in professional life, just the way we talked about women, the way men, particularly in a Christian setting with that whole male privilege dominance thing and women's submissive thing, the way we talked about women, the way the jokes that were made. I mean, I've even called up a few or wrote some emails to some people. I look back at things that I go, man, I was just, and I don't mean disgustingly inappropriate. I just mean the things that were humorous then. And if you watch some of the old comedies like Cheers and whatever, there's a whole lot of inappropriate there that you could never put out today. And I just, it's made my heart hurt, honestly, for women who felt like they were being used and had no recourse back in the day. Now they have recourse, which is awesome, but still how cavalierly men might touch women. And I don't even mean in a predatory kind of way, but at least crossing boundaries and making women feel uncomfortable, which seems to be what a lot's behind this Christianity Today thing. And I mean, this, we never had training in sexual harassment, never had, you know, here's appropriate or inappropriate. And there were a lot of women jokes back in the day and a lot of talk that was okay back then that would be absolutely out of bounds today. It should have been out of bounds then, but nobody knew, you know. I look back at that time with a certain, I feel it for this guy. I feel it for the organization, what they're going through, but also it causes me to be introspective on my own life and just, man, no, there were times when inappropriate humor and comments and things really objectified women around me in ways that I would find disgusting today, honestly.
It's interesting to even think about that. I think about some of the conversations that I would even have with my friends in college and they, again, not intentionally trying to be mean or derogatory or anything like that. And yet, oh my gosh, like they would have definitely fallen into out of bounds conversations now. Like I even think about some of the jokes that I used to tell as kind of standard jokes, or even the, I did a speech back in high school that was a comedy informative speech on how to become a pickup line master. And in that speech, I outlined how to choose an appropriate line depending on what type of woman you were wanting to approach.
Oh my gosh.
And I think about that now, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know. I definitely wouldn't write that speech again.
Yeah, and it's hard to talk about because even now, I mean, looking back, because we played a lot of co-ed volleyball, and there were comments made, or golf. Even still, somebody leaves a putt short and they'll say, you know, that putter gets stuck in your skirt or something like that. I mean, it's just, And if you're a woman and you grow up in a world where that's normative, horribly so, I'm glad we're talking about it. You know, it's probably 8,000 years too late to be talking about it, but at least we are now. And I know it's difficult. You get around guys, they'll talk about this, but they won't talk about it around women because they're just afraid. There's landmines here. Just like talking about race. I don't know where the landmine is that's going to get me canceled and get people upset and angry. I just hope we all have a greater sense of sensitivity to it as it unfolds. And that's, you know, coming back to get some folks now that are made some comments or, you know, laid a hand on a shoulder or did some things where a woman felt like her boundaries were crossed. And according to this, they, you know, those were brought up and they were ignored. So that's a deal. Okay. I like when anybody says to me, you know what, Wayne, that seems like a little far for me. Great. Thank you for telling me or whatever, you know, because even the dilemma of, you know, traveling around and meeting people and who's a hugger, who's not, side hug, front hug, hugging at all, going to have a picture taken, put your arm around the person, shoulder, do you not? Do you, oh my gosh. It is so complicated now, but I'm telling you, I think it's horrible what we've done to women over centuries of having male privilege, and we just say it that way, and treating women in ways that wasn't respectful of their personhoods.
So how do you think we navigate the pendulum, right? Like to be more aware and honoring of the women that are in our lives that we interact with on a day-to-day basis. And yet I think too of some of the conversations that I have with some people that I work with. And I see also like the flip side of where there's almost an oversensitivity or an over-awareness of like, I don't want to do anything that would cross a boundary or make a person feel uncomfortable. And as a result, people are feeling more isolated. There's not I don't know quite how to say this, but like there's almost a disconnect from healthy, positive human interaction in some regards, if that makes sense.
So yeah, I have a client that they're a little bit younger. They're in a grade in elementary and they love to give hugs. And as a counselor, I'm so hypersensitive to that. And I tried not to freak out, but I almost freaked out the first time that they gave me a hug and they ran up and it was just a trust. I appreciate you. And yet everything in me professionally was like, ooh, I can't do this. And like, turn your body so you get a side hug, you know, that kind of thing, just trying to be super, super intentional about that. And so, man, it's interesting, you know, just thinking about that. And as a counselor, just being very, very aware of that. And yet knowing at times there's a time when a client really needs a hug. And yet it's like, do you just completely shut that down? Do you not even offer that? Or especially with things in today's world, do you cut that off? How do you handle appropriate human interaction, specifically with physical contact, in a way that's healing, not damaging, or feels like it's encroaching on somebody's boundaries or making somebody feel uncomfortable? That's a tough one. It's a really tough one.
It is tough.
Especially in my field, the ethics of that is something that's constantly being talked about amongst myself and my peers.
Well, I'm sure it is. And I don't think there's an answer, like an abstract answer. I think in my contact with people, you've got to be sensitive to the moment. And I even just ask people, are you okay with a hug? I just ask if they're coming at me and, you know, are you a hugger? Some people let you know right away they're a hugger, but I think you let the other person kind of decide that for you rather than you deciding it. Cause even a young girl that might really like little hugs, you know, from a trusting older person, somebody will come along in her life and take advantage of that. So that'd be something I'd be talking about with the parent. Are you cool with this? And are you, and this is why Wayne is safe maybe. And, you know, Uncle George may not be or whatever. I know we don't want to set it the lowest common denominator. That's what we've had in schools now. You know, teachers aren't supposed to touch kids at all in California schools. And because there's too much trouble going on, but then you cut off affection on the positive side, because you've had to hem it in because of the predators. And it's going to be tough for our society to negotiate that. But I do think it's better that we're talking about it and realizing that men have often overstepped with women And even just not even because they're predatory in mind, just they were more affectionate than the woman wanted. Because objectifying women is what our society has been doing for eons and eons and still does it. We've got the Me Too movement over here and we've got the pornography industry over there and movies and things that you would say, man, that's inappropriate, but you're paying someone to do that. It's weird. It's a tough time for guys, but I don't think we can be overly aware of the people around us and what makes them feel safe and where's good affection. Cause a lot of people don't get real good affection in their life. They've not had it. And if someone's safe that they know and can be affectionate with them in a purely platonic, just I appreciate you as a person kind of deal, as my brother, sister in Christ, then great. And but there's the problem because the predator types do hover around kids and religious groups, and that just goes on. Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we've talked way too long about all that to get to some other stuff today. So you got a best thing you heard this week?
I do have a best thing that we heard this week. I was actually watching a movie the other day, and this quote came up. You are only powerless if you believe you are powerless. So that was a really interesting one. That one caught me off guard this week.
What if you've been kidnapped, tied to a chair, and gagged? You're powerless?
You're definitely being taken advantage of, yes.
Okay. There are times when you might actually be powerless. You might think you're powerful, but not sure you are. But I understand the larger point you're making. Yeah. In most cases, there's options to do. And maybe we'll get to some of that today because I think sometimes we're too limited to our intellect and our logic to know what else God might have in mind for us. So.
Well, and the interesting part was that the context in the movie was a person was talking about their identity and that they felt like they were basically powerless to live out of who they felt like they were created to be. And the person who was mentoring this individual said, you're only powerless in your mind and you're only powerless to live out of who you feel like you were created to be and authentic to who you are designed to be. If you think you are, if you continue to agree with that sense of powerlessness, then that's what's holding you back or that's what's going to hinder you.
Yeah. And that, you know, obviously being tied to a chair is very different than just being manipulated by people around you who want you to meet their expectations to love you. That's where we have a lot more power than we realize. Unless we want the outcome of that person's affection, then we are going to get manipulated if they're that kind of person.
What was the best thing you heard this week?
Yeah, it wasn't this week. I'll be honest. It was back on March 11th, the podcast we did on Seeing God in the Moment. Mm-hmm. Someone posted a blog comment, and it kind of went by me. I saw it, and then about a week later, I just got, what was that? I'm going back and take a look at that. And this is the comments from Mitchell. He said, when I heard Jack's question toward the end of the podcast, the word witness instantly came to mind. Mm. It's interesting that the entirety of the scriptures always speaks of witness, not predictor. Presumptions based on false expectations. Oh, how we love to figure it all out from prophecy. Father's faithfulness has little to do with how I perceive things in accordance with my fleshly eyes. We cannot see anything but the possible next step. But I really hit that, and some of the folks I pray with about what's going on in the world, I shared that because as we're trying to discern God's work in this present evil age and how God does what he does in the world and praying about it, particularly the delusional aspects of the last number of years and how it's affected people all over the world, and trying to see what is so much bigger than us or what God isn't revealing yet. And where this was a giant exhale for me, was that God's ever only asked us to be a witness. Mm. So what I've seen of him, I can give bare witness to that. What I don't see or don't know yet, I can't. Yeah. And I don't have to. And I don't have to figure it out. And I don't have to read all the prophecy and try to figure out, is this the beginning of the last war in Ukraine, which could be over by now or still going on by the time this airs? And I love the fact that, even in our praying and growing and sharing and whatever, we're witness to what God reveals to us, not trying to get answers that he's not giving us. And it just made it so much easier to be inside that space.
Good.
It made me think, too, this is a weird question, but in the midst of all that's going on in Ukraine and Putin and the West. And I had this thought the other day, just in thinking about all that. What if Jesus, instead of being born to a carpenter and his wife, what if he'd been born in a royal family in Rome, one of the Caesar's children? What if he'd become Caesar? How does Jesus be Jesus trying to lead a country and force unregenerate humanity to act in ways they should act?
Wow.
And it just, what it did is go, I get why you came as a carpenter. Now it's like, oh, it's just God was so humble. He came in a carpenter's kid, da, da. How else could he come?
Yeah.
Could he have been royalty? Could he have ascended a throne somewhere? Now I'm going to bring the kingdom by force. That's how the kingdoms only worked back then, because of swords and horses. And we got more people to kill you than you've got. I'm reading Maccabees in the whole Apocrypha. And I just go, man, it's one king killing kings after other kings to take land that you took from me and I've taken it back. It's just, it's the same stuff we have going in our world today. Only it was much more, I mean, back then it changed seasonally.
Yeah.
This king got defeated, so his son gets it. Now I'm going to go attack you and get my stuff back. And it's going on all the time. How could Jesus have come with the conventions of human power and brought a kingdom into the world that's got to transform the heart before it transforms the outer? I just go, it's amazing. Suddenly the incarnation made a little more sense to me. Why he didn't come riding on a white horse and take the mantle of Rome off of Jerusalem and sit there and potentate himself in Jerusalem. It wouldn't have brought the kingdom because hearts hadn't been changed yet. So can you make people do right? Yeah, if you got enough power, you can make people do right. Do you do them any favors? It just made a lot of sense to me why Jesus couldn't come as the top of the human power pyramid, and why people who are constantly trying to get there can't reflect his glory. Can't. That's not the kind of power the kingdom is. Not now, not yet. The kingdoms of this world will become the kingdoms of our God, but that's going to be a heart reality. It's not just going to be, I'm boss now and you're going to do what I say. It's going to be, no, transformed lives, transformed love, eradicating sin and failure and shame and bondage and all this. So I don't know. That's some weird thinking today.
No, that's really interesting. Because you think about when the crowds wanted to make him king, right? And his response was, no, I don't want to be king. He would go into the wilderness. He would remove himself from the crowds when he got the sense that they wanted to make him king and force him into this place of leadership. And yet, how often are the conferences in the evangelical communities, the topics in sermons, how often do they focus on leadership and moving towards that greater level of impact and that greater platform and the bigger audience? And yet that's where they focus on so often.
And the power to compel.
Yes.
And the power to compel doesn't fit with the kingdom at all. It's the opposite of the kingdom. Jesus' kingdom was not compulsive. It was invitation. And I just go, wow, that it just made a little more sense to me why it wasn't just God, I'm going to come humbly. No, I'm going to come the only place I can come. If I want to change the world to the heart, then I can't come as a Caesar. I can't come as a conquering king, because now I've got a bunch of slaves that have to do what I say because my guys have the big swords. And yet you're right. That's what a lot of people are trying to seek today.
And it's interesting, though, you say the power to compel, and yet he had the power to compel, right? Like, but it wasn't through what the society or the culture would have thought of as the way to compel. And yet his life and the kingdom that he brought, the good news that he was inviting people into, was compelling. It allured people into a new reality, a new kingdom, a new experience. And yet it wasn't through conventional human wisdom. It wasn't in the routes that most people would have taken in order to share the most important story, the most important message, to offer the most important invitation that the world had ever known.
But you're using compelling in an endearing way.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm using compelling as force,
correct?
Force of sword. So, yeah, Jesus did not have the. I mean, he could have compelled. He'd come on the white horse. I'm gonna cut your head off until I find the three people on the planet who want to do my will. That would not have been helpful. Not if you're trying to rescue lost people. But yeah, I think his kingdom is compelling, but he's not compulsive.
Correct.
There was no place in his ministry he said, "You're going to do this, or I'm going to level you." It just didn't. Incredible, and he suffered. Would you say a significant amount of abuse?
Just a little bit, yeah.
And I don't even mean the crucifixion. Definitely when you get there, but his whole life, the Pharisees are doing stuff, lying about him. And does he have the, I mean, could snap his fingers and wipe people off the planet. And yet he was here for a different reason. And I agree with you, it was compelling, but in a different way. So I don't know how we're going to do this. This is going to be fun. For those of you, you've heard on this podcast over the last 6-8 months, maybe longer, we've kind of talked about a different way of seeing the transformative experience in Christ, transformative love. It's a chart thing that I've been kind of talking around the world in various places I've traveled. And I enjoy it. I mean, it just opens up so many doors to have conversations with people. And I'm looking for a way to share that. And now I've got a book that I'm working on that kind of puts that in there. But that's a year or so out, maybe more. I don't know. We thought maybe it would be fun to talk about here. How does love transform us? And it's a chart. We'll put it up in a little bit. So if you haven't seen the I know people go, you have pictures with these things? Because, you know, with the podcast, nobody ever looks at pictures anywhere other than the podcast cover. But you might want to go to the website if you want to see a chart of these things. Because that chart will grow over time. And I don't want to make it so much of a flow chart in terms of mentally. I really want people to think about it relationally and how it lives out. Like I was with someone this morning, went for a walk, and he's got some issues in his life, practical kind of, you know, kids and work and those kinds of things. And so we were talking about it through the course of the walk, and he was talking about a lot of things. You could tell he was stressed over it, struggling with it. And so partway through, I just said, so let me ask you a question. Do you feel like you're alone in this and you've got your best wisdom, logic to sort it out? And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, well, where's God in it? I mean, and he said, well, now I'm asking God for this, for this, for this, for this. And I said, yeah, what if this and this and this don't come? He said, well, they're not coming. And I said, so then what's the next thought? And honestly, he didn't have one. And I don't think he's unique in that. I think a lot of the Christians I talk to, somehow we've moved from a living relationship with Jesus, that he's in this with me, giving me wisdom about stuff, to I'm kind of left alone in this with my best stuff and things I've heard taught and remembered and trying to apply the Christian life to this particular situation. And on the other hand, I'm offering petitions to God saying, if you'll save me with this, save me with that, save me with that. And I just think neither one of those are particularly helpful. And so part of my conversation was, where does God enter into this with you? So it's not you're just left to your intellect or logic, or you're left to, I'm going to make requests and be disappointed every day when they're not answered, hoping someday I hit the lottery. I don't mean a metaphorical lottery where God actually gives me the thing that fixes all my concerns. But I say, what do you do in the meantime? And I think that's what this understanding helps people do. So we're going to try and do this. And I know I hate doing this because this is like when we did the Jake book the first time, right? We put a chapter a week, a chapter a month that became a chapter every 4.5 months. And I don't know. I don't think we're going to do every podcast like in order because other things will come up. But we kind of want to do a transformative love series where once in a while we back up and pick up the next stage in this thing. And then we may do it consecutively. Who knows? I mean, we don't even do this for another month, right?
I'm really excited just to dive into this because I've seen the conversation, and even with the young adults retreat that we did up in Colorado Springs, and just watching the dialogue that came from it. As I've looked at I've seen you present it a few different ways and a few different times in different audiences. And yet I think it really gets at the heart of what does that process look like as God continues to win us into a deeper experience of rest, love, and play? It's so intriguing. And I want to, I want to get the dialogue out there so that people can be processing it more and just see what the feedback is and see what people, how people are responding.
Yeah, I find people who have gone through this with, and I've done it with a lot of people, some in groups and some people individually, just say, listen, this is how I see this. And they see themselves in it. Almost every conversation that comes up after that kind of refers back to that. It's kind of like, I'm right in here. This is where I'm struggling. And it's really good because one of the things I said to my friend today, I said, you know, maybe what you need is, Jesus, where are you in this process right now? And what are you revealing to me? He goes, yeah, but I don't have any way to do that. I said, well, you could ask him, right? You could ask me. I live down the road. Mm-hmm. You could say, Wayne, would you help me sort this out? I'm going, and he's like, I'll say, I never thought of that. Because most of our learning is passive. If it's important, it'll come to me in a sermon or a book. I can't go to somebody and say, would you help me kind of get how Jesus wants to walk me through this? Because I'm feeling pretty alone. And I'd go, yeah, man, that's the gift that lots of people have been to me over the course of my life. And that's because I've asked. That's actually because I've gone to people saying, you know what? You seem to get this in ways I don't. You mind helping me out a little bit? I've never had anybody say, no, I haven't got time to help you. Get out of here. Well, a few people that were busy in ministry said that, but not real people in real relationships. So it sets up this way, and I'm going to refer a little bit to John 3 and John 15. I don't want to do a teaching. I just want to kind of set the context. If you look at the chart that's up on the webpage, you're going to see three circles top left mm-hmm. that kind of look like God, that three consecutive circles, kind of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit. You see a messed up human being down below that, kind of all scrubbed up in his stuff. And then you're going to see on the far right, you're going to see a sun. And on the bottom, far right bottom, you're going to see a bunch of weeds. And in the middle, because this is all we got of the chart so far, you're going to see in the top part of the middle, these blue swirly lines. And in the bottom part, you're going to see four or five lines pushing downward, gravity. And those are the two things I think we'd want to kind of kick off, because the journey Jesus asked us to walk has an incredible amount of promise in it, right? And John 14, 15, 16, even 13, 17, the upper room discourse, we call it. It just talks about my joy be in you and your joy full. He talks about, you know, the abundance of life that comes. He talks about love, having prayers answered. If we go to the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5, I mean, we're seeing amazing things, love, joy, peace, abundance, and being able to navigate life in that sense of being blessed and being cared for and being loved. And yet, as we read in that letter from Mark Galli a couple of weeks ago, most Christians don't feel that. They feel like that. What do you mean abundance? I feel like scarcity around every curve. Yeah. I don't have peace. I'm restless all the time. I've got anxiety out the kazoo. I'm worried about this. I've got insecurities about that. And so that's the two things I kind of want to contrast, because I see those in my life. I have those periods where the bottom part of the chart that goes to the weeds is the weight of the chaos of the broken creation. Okay, we can put anything in that. Put my sin in that, yes. Put the sin of others around me in that, yes. Put religion in that, yeah. Whatever pulls you down into that space of not being enough, not being loved, I've got to make it on my own, and that leads to the kind of despair, anxiety, futility. It just feels like none of this is worth it, which is where Mark's letter went. So it's a good opening to this, actually. Because I think when I've lived there, and I've lived most of my life there, not trying to get to the promises of God, but only through human effort, only through works, only through, and I don't mean, you know, ritual stuff. I mean, read the Bible and pray and seek God and try and follow him. And I'm trying to get up there where my prayers get answered, but it doesn't work. And it may have moments and days, but over time it would just, the cares of this life and all that stuff would just be overwhelming. So that's how I want us to think about it. And you who are listening can interact with us. That on the one hand, we have this chaotic brokenness, fallenness of the creation of which we're a part, that seeks to drag us every day into the weeds of our own anxieties and our own pain and our own loss. And then we have what Jesus began to talk about with Nicodemus, John chapter 3. He said, you know how the wind blows and you don't know where it comes from or where it's going? So is everyone born in the Spirit, because the Spirit's like a wind. And so is everyone who is born of him, that has that newness of life. And we read those scriptures going, okay, we did that, right? Went through the hoops, did the sinner's prayer, got my baptism on, got filled with the Spirit, got. And yeah, I still feel like I get drugged back down to the chaos of creation and the pain of it and the hurt. And if your flesh doesn't help you there, there's other people's flesh around you will help you get there, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so the other is that you get to be, if you're born again, there's this way to live where God lives. Way to, Paul talked about, set your mind on things above, not on things below. Jesus talks about as being windblown. Just let the Holy Spirit carry you into, and where that's carried, the sun in the upper right represents all the opposite of the weeds. So the weeds is anxiety and fear and frustration and struggle and unanswered prayer and all that. And the other side would be God's glory, God's peace, God's joy, God's abundance, God's, and those aren't circumstantial. That's what I want to help people kind of separate. We kind of think, oh, this is when my circumstances are chaotic because the world's blah, blah, blah. And then this is where my circumstances are all perfect. No, that's not what we're talking about. Because the promises of peace and joy and love and abundance are not circumstantially based. They supersede our circumstances. It's joy in the midst. And that's what I asked my friend this morning. We were taking a walk. I said, so if you knew what God was thinking about you today, he's your provider. He's already got something out there for you. There's a way that he'll do that that will be even better for your family than the way you want him to do it. And you're kind of in wait mode. I've done everything I know to do, and I just hope it's going to come out one day. What if there's a way you get to know how God's unfolding his reality to you, so that then your believing it is not just, I'm believing these abstract promises, but I'm in fact learning to see what God's doing in this thing.
It's so powerful as you start to get into this process and as you start to sort out, okay, what does this look like? How do I navigate this? And yet just this week, Wayne, like, man, it was so intriguing because I started this one day and had a lot of just this sense of the rest, love, and play. And there was some turbulent things that were coming up just in our family and some pressures and some different things. And just felt this peace, like this rest. And there wasn't the stress or anxiety. It was just like, okay, we're going to hold that. And then almost from that space, and literally I was having this conversation with a couple and they're like, man, there's like a whole nother level of fulfillment that we see in your life. Like, you just seem like you're at peace, even though you just listed off like a half dozen things that would stress us out. And then literally the next day, it was like there was a tug of war for my heart about whether or not I was going to believe that. Because it was like a whole nother barrage of just stuff, of just that pressure and that angst of the world just came. And man, it was intense, like just trying to navigate that and sort that out and say, okay, Lord, what's going on here? Like, what is this battle for my heart? And why is this happening right now? And I got to the end of the day and was just kind of was going back and forth throughout the day of living in that and resting in that and residing in that. And I didn't do well when I walked into the door of my house. And Jess was like, hey, let's, so she and I just sat and spent some time talking and she spent some time just praying. And it was so good because nothing in our situation changed. Like those things, those world pressures were still there, but it was almost, and sometimes it was almost a minute by minute or every hour by hour realigning myself with, no, this is the truth. This is where the rest, love, and play comes in. This is where that invitation that God has been offering Jess and I, and we're learning to live in that. This is where it would lead us. And yet sometimes, I mean, that's why, right? That there's that constant encouragement to write these things on your heart, write them on your hands, put them where you need to, because often, you know, that there are those things that barrage of things that the world will try to send your way that will want to choke out that rest, love, and play.
Yeah. And I think that's the invitation when Jesus is inviting the disciples, the Matthew 11 that Eugene Peterson translates so beautifully as learning the unforced rhythms of grace. And Jesus said, come and learn from me. And I found myself telling my friend that today. I said, you know, you can ask for my help and I'd be available to you to do that. But I said, ultimately, This is what Jesus wants to teach us. And instead of being caught up in my logic, how do I fix this on the one hand, and being frustrated that I don't know enough to fix it yet, or the other hand, I'm praying for an answer that's not coming, so that's very frustrating. What if the prayer was, Jesus, would you teach me? Would you show me what you're doing here? Yeah. And he goes, really? And I said, yeah, it's just that simple. And it's that individualistic. It's not, I'm never going to get that in a book. You're never going to get that in a sermon somewhere that everybody's got the exact same fix. And it's not even just by, well, setting your eyes on things above. That's easy to say. But if God, what would teach me right now? So that my situation is not just, I need to get it fixed. But what now in this extremity can I learn about listening? Can I learn about following? What is it that you would show me today? What piece of something? And I said to him, I think what that means is, because I've seen this in my own life, God gives a piece of something. And when I live in that, I'm looking different. So now I see different doors open that I wouldn't have seen in the old Wayne would have walked right by them because I had an outcome in mind. And it had to fit certain criteria, and that wasn't fitting it. And so how many doors did I walk past that are wide open, Jesus is standing on the other side and saying, come this way. And go, that's not what I'm looking for right now. I'm looking to have that fixed. And what this makes is every day the adventure of I get to wake up and I get to ask Jesus to teach me to follow him today. And it's like a treasure hunt. I'm looking for, what's Jesus showing me today? What's he making clear? What invite, and this is a real distinction for me, what invites my heart to lightness, because that's where the wind and breath is, and what's dragging me down into heaviness? And if I recognize that, like someone I posted on these Instagram posts that Tracy made for me that I've been putting up over the last year and a half or so, someone wrote about one last week. I love this expression. She just made the comment on the Instagram thing. My heart just wraps around this and breathes.
Hmm. Ooh, that's a good picture.
Or like when I said about that thing that caused me to exhale, this idea of being witness, not expert, not predictor. What causes you to go, and I don't mean selfishly, you know, this is false comfort. I mean the real stuff. Yeah. And that's Jesus inviting us to soar with him. Instead of being drugged down by all that's going on around, even the war in Ukraine, even the pandemic, even the financial stupidity of nations in these days, even with all of that, what invites me to exhale, to breathe, to have that sense of lightness in my heart that, yeah, this is a heavy situation. This situation could destroy me, but my heart is finding a way to navigate this in lightness. The chapter I worked on about this in the book has one of the characters has a soaring pilot's license. And it's like, you know, once you get up there, you know, a plane's whatever drug you up in the sky and you start soaring, you got to find a thermal, right? Yeah. Or you're coming back to it. Gravity always wins. That gravity is going to pull you back down. And a good glider pilot is going to be looking for the kinds of things on the ground that would maybe indicate there might be a thermal there. There might be that updraft. The Holy Spirit is the updraft. I love that analogy. Yeah. I'm looking in my day as kind of a treasure hunt. Yeah, I might be carrying something heavy. I'm not light and funny and relaxed today, but in that gravity, I'm looking for the fingerprint of God that's offering me an invitation upward. And I hope that makes sense to people because it's a little difficult to put your head around until you know it. And I think many people have had those experiences where you felt just dragged down and obliterated. And all of a sudden something begins to move your heart. It might be just something you recognize as true. It might be something that happens that has God's fingerprint. I was the other day, and this is crazy. Bob Marley wrote a song, Three Mice, Three Something, or rather. I don't even know what it is. I don't know the song, and I'm not a song guy. I was in a store, and I heard this music, and on a kind of a, I'm carrying a situation before God with a certain amount of seriousness in my heart, and it was one of those days where it was weighing heavily on me. And I walked in, and this song is going to be, relax, because everything's going to be okay. And I noticed the happy music before I listen to the lyrics. And I know people think this is weird, but did I walk in at that moment, that song comes on because God's saying something to me? And I'm saying yes.
Yeah.
Because it lightened my heart. It was a thermal for me to wrap my heart around and go, everything's going to be okay, which is what God has been saying to me all along. Take your hands off of it. It's going to be okay. And I keep trying to figure out a way to get my hands around it. And when I believe he does, I'm in that space of lightness, of the unforced rhythm of grace. And when I'm down to, I've got to fix this somehow, and stewing over the options and knowing there aren't any good options to fix it on my own, then that difference between gravity and finding that thermal, which I think of, I've never done gliding, but I think as a glider pilot, when you're kind of looking for that, all of a sudden you hit that updraft, and we know the weightlessness of that. You know, when you're pulled up like on a roller coaster or whatever, there's a weightless sensation and a freedom, and I'm soaring and I don't have to go back to the airport just yet. And I think this is what God wants to invite all of us into. Where is that thermal? Where's that breath in your life that carries you into the space where Jesus lives, rather than being weighed down with left only to Wayne's logic and Wayne's tools and Wayne's actions?
I love the idea of thermals. I love that imagery, especially with the glider pilot. And it just reminds me of something that I was actually listening to this week. I was listening to a podcast on John 6. And one of the podcasters was just talking about this idea that the Spirit is almost like these moments, like these updrafts, like you're talking about, that often they're almost like a shooting star, right? And we could even be sitting, I mean, how many other people were sitting in the store and heard the same song and yet had, I mean, it meant nothing to them. And yet it's like two people sitting in a meadow looking up at the sky, and one gets to see this shooting star and the other doesn't. And yet it's that recognition, that specificity of, oh man, like there it is. You know, there's that updraft, or there's that shooting star that meant something very important to me in that moment, that allowed me to lean into something that was more freeing, or just lifted up that heart. Like that's what I love, that expression of just lifting up the heart and allowing you to take that deep breath. Is that's when I actually see a shooting star, it's like, oh, that was beautiful. Like, and it was, even if it was for a fleeting moment, like that was gorgeous. I love that.
I'm sure the way God works, probably everybody in that store needed that song.
Yeah.
But some didn't hear it. Some did. Maybe not. Maybe not everybody did. But I just don't think God does that for Wayne.
Yeah.
I think that the universe, there's this weight of gravity and brokenness and chaos that comes at all of us. And there's the light and life of God that comes at all of us. And it really is Jesus by Nicodemus to catch this other wind. Catch that. Don't. He's a full-on Pharisee, and Jesus is telling him, you must be born again, which wasn't go forward and get baptized. We cheapened that into, it's a decision for salvation. Instead of, no, it's a different way to live. Forget all that religious stuff of I've got to earn it. Because where we'll go next, I know we're out of time today. Where we'll go next is, how do we go from being caught in the gravity to, and if everybody's thinking at the end of, oh, I've got to learn to do this, I just say, well, hold on till the next part. Because it's not you learning to do this as much as you recognize God revealing himself to you. Because he wants to carry you into that. It's the Spirit is the wind, and he wants to carry us along. Because our first thought religiously is always, well, what do I have to do?
Yeah, exactly.
What do I have to do to be saved? What do I have to do to do? What do I have to do to know the will of God? What do I have to, how do we work the works of God? I mean, even in scripture, you've got all those questions. And the message of the incarnation, what we'll talk about next time we do this, is how does God reveal himself? How is he already revealing himself? Because as much as the gravity of the world is all around you, so is the breath of the Spirit.
Yeah.
It's that we're more tuned to the gravity.
Yeah.
Then we are the breath. Yeah. And I hope what we'll talk about in weeks to come is helps people find a way back to that breath and find a way. Oh, I see what he's doing now. I'm not left with my logic or just prayers thrown out there that I get the fix I want someday, but I'm actually navigating my circumstances today with Jesus. And that will set my heart at rest, even when circumstances are still ridiculously painful.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.